Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salieri Report. I am going to have a conversation today with Harry Blaser about gun ownership. Harry is a man who needs no introduction here on the Salieri Report. He's been the host of our food series, which if you haven't dipped into it, I cannot recommend enough. As it turns out, in addition to being the world's leading expert on food from my point of view, he is also the only person in the world I know who's more passionate about the topic of gun ownership than me. And so I wanted to invite him to help me have this conversation because it's one that he knows a great deal about, and he's thought it through. He's thought it through at a very deep level for many years. So, Harry, welcome to the Salieri Report, and why don't we start with why you are as passionate, if not more passionate, about this issue than I am.
Well, what I'd like to do is actually create a little context for the discussion from my perspective. And I'm going to start out by saying, what does a gun do? You know, we've been throwing rocks for many, probably hundreds of thousands of years as humans. And all that a gun is basically a more efficient rock thrower. You know, we've worried about the amount of mass, how fast we throw it, and how accurate. Basically, a handgun, a rifle, a musket, or these types of weaponry are basically ways of throwing rocks more accurately so that you can stop.
Right, it's David's slingshot.
There you go. That's right. He had to make sure he had a big enough rock, that it was going fast enough, that it hit the right spot. Okay? And so why do we need that? Well, we need it for self-protection. We need it for hunting. We need it for... And then also we practice with it so that we can be good at hunting and self-protection. Now, the biggest problem, actually, with gun violence is democide. And the expert on it is R.J. Rummel. And we're going to have all these references because, you know, what I know in terms of the technicalities of things going on is nothing compared to other people that spend their life doing this. So we'll have all of those references so you can go take a look at them. But I'd just like to read from the first chapter of Death by Government by Mr. Rummel a few things, okay? The first thing is... How many people have been killed in the 20th century by governments? So here's a few numbers. Mr. Stalin, and his numbers are very conservative. Since then, they've been upped. Joseph Stalin, 42.5 million. Mao Zedong, 37.8 million. Adolf Hitler, 21 million. Chiang Kai-shek, this is their own citizens, 10 million. Lenin, 4 million. Hojo Hideki, the Japanese premier, 4,000. Pol Pot, 4 million. Pol Pot, 2.4 million. Yahya Khan, who's Pakistan, 1.5 million. Joseph Broz Tito, 1.1 million. Okay, so he goes on to say that basically... In some 70 years between Lenin and Stalin, they chewed up almost 40 million lives, well over twice as many as probably died in some 400 years of African slave trade. Not to make slavery look good, but just to put it in some context. Note immediately in the figure that the human cost of democide is far greater than that of war for authoritarian and totalitarian regimes. But when you put the cost of war and democide together, power has killed over 203 million people in the 20th century. Some people actually now have it up to about 350, I think, in some revised work that he's done. All this killing of foreigners by democracies, who was involved with killing, but not nearly as much, may seem to violate the power principle, but really it underlies it. For in each case, the killing was carried out in a highly undemocratic fashion. This is for democracies. In secret, behind a conscious cover of lies and deceit, and by agencies and power holders that had the wartime authority to operate autonomously, all were shielded by tight censorship of the press and control of journalists. Even the indiscriminate bombing of German cities by the British was disguised before the House of Commons and in press releases as attacks on German military targets. That the general strategic bombing policy was to attack working men's homes was kept secret still long after the war. Just a few more quotes. In each case, as the arbitrary power of a regime increases massively, that is, as we move from democratic through authoritarian to totalitarian regimes, the amount of killing jumps by huge multiples. As the arbitrary power of regimes increases, the range of their democide jumps, and to such a great extent that the low democide for the authoritarian regime is above the democratic high, and the low democide for the totalitarian regime is above the authoritarian high. Power is a necessary cause for war or democide. I believe that war and democide can be understood within a common framework. They are part of the same social process, a balancing of power where power is supreme. Okay, so you get the idea. There's a few more quotes I've highlighted. But basically, the biggest fear we have is of governments going bad. Okay? You don't need any more proof of it. Now, the guys that wrote the Second Amendment understood that. That's why they have it in there. That's also why they phrased it the way that they did. Now, I'm going to spend no time on justifying that the Second Amendment is not a collective right, it's an individual right, and it's not about hunting, just hunting, it's about defending yourself, and it's also about defending yourself from corrupt governments. But I'm going to give you a lot of reference so that you can basically prove it to yourself, including, you know, one of the most important experts on the thing that was actually consulted when they were doing the Heller judgment in the Supreme Court, Stephen P. Holbrook. So he's probably as good an expert on the Second Amendment as anybody. But what I will tell you is, if you have any understanding at all, even when the Anti-Federalists and the Federalists were fighting with each other, the one thing they always agreed on is the citizenry needs to be armed. There needs to be militia. The militia, a citizen army, needs to be foundation for the defense of the community, for the defense of the state, and for the defense of the country. Okay, and but somewhere along the road with all these things, because this is a very clear right, it says it can't be infringed. But people keep talking about, well, you know, we regulate our Bill of Rights still. We have the right to regulate it because you can't, you know, the favorite thing is you can't yell fire in a crowded theater in justification of the freedom of speech, First Amendment, which is also freedom of religion and so on. Okay, but first of all, if anyone attempted the same types of restrictions that people are putting in place, the states are putting in place, you know, for the First Amendment, forget it. All those leftists that are putting it in place, they'd be on the exactly opposite side of the fence. So, for example, I don't tell you how many words you can have in a paragraph. I don't tell you how many capital letters you can use. I don't tell you, you know, the tone you need to use. I don't tell you the length of your document. I don't tell you where and when you can you know, express your opinions, except with very, very few regulations on that. But that's kind of the equivalent of what the gun regulations do, you know. So when you take a look, for example, at New York City versus Montana, the gun laws. Now, under Montana, basically you have an unlimited right to bear arms and carry arms and keep arms, with the exception of you can't carry to concealed. That's by the Constitution. So even though Montana is probably one of the model states for gun laws, in the way it was envisioned, they still put a stupid restriction right in the Constitution of the state. Okay, now it comes from the fact that, you know, in the late 1800s, it wasn't looked at very gentlemanly if you went into a gunfight that you had something hidden. You know, put your gun out by your side and let's go at it. So, but it doesn't matter. But all I'm saying is, states have very weird ways of regulating the Bill of Rights. Every state does it differently. So when you look at the various state gun laws, it is an absolute nightmare. And you have to even be careful about when you're traveling across the country about, oh, is my gun with me in the car or is it in the trunk? Is it loaded? Well, what's the definition of loaded? New York considers a gun loaded if there's ammunition in your suitcase along with the gun that's in a locked container. Okay, so there's incredible amounts of interpretation. It's backed up to a large extent by the courts because of reasons we know. You know, one time when I said this to you, you said, well, because they got control files on these guys. Well, it seems that way. Because otherwise, who would come up with the state laws that are in California and New York and Illinois that basically guaranteed to make victims out of honest citizens, law-abiding citizens? When you go to New York and you're a 65, 70-year-old guy walking down the street, you have no ability to defend yourself. None. They've taken away everything, anything you can think of. You know, like even a pocket knife can't be more than 2 1/4 inches or whatever it is, 2 1/2. You know, you can't have sprays. You can't have stun gun. You can't have a club. You can't have a kitchen knife. You know, anything that you could think of, they basically have done the exact opposite of what our forefathers wanted. They've made you a victim as opposed to giving you your God-given right, the most important one, of protecting your damn self and your friends and your families and your communities, okay? So we just have to understand that there's a huge discrepancy between states. The worst are on the coasts, although Vermont is one of the better ones. And you can get in big trouble. But just let me, for example, in the Montana law, out of this book, which is one of the experts on it, is Gary Marbit. He wrote a book, Gun Law of Montana, but there's also gun laws of different states in book form. So in Montana, there's no registration of firearms. There's no registration of firearm owners. There's no permits required to buy firearms. There's no permits required to own firearms. No permits required to possess firearms. No permits required to transport firearms. No permits required to buy ammunition. No storage requirements for firearms or ammunition. No state waiting period for firearm purchase. No limit on the firearms a person may buy in a specific period. No sales tax on firearms or ammunition. No personal property tax on firearms or ammunition. No limit on the number of firearms a person may own. No limit on the number of firearms a person may keep at home. No arsenal license required for storage of multiple firearms. No gun locks required by law. No state background check for firearm purchase, but there is a federal check for everybody. No regulation of private firearm sales between individuals. No legal duty to retreat or flee if attacked. No permits needed to operate a shooting range outside cities. No permit required to carry concealed weapons outside cities, which is 99.6% of Montana. But the 6 major cities, you do need a permit if you're going to carry it concealed. No licenses, permits, or registration to own machine guns. So in other words, they don't ban them because federal law allows them under certain circumstances, if they're maybe before 1986, plus lots of other things that you have to go through. But some states say it doesn't matter that the feds approve of them. We're going to not allow them. Okay, so no licenses, permits, or registration to own silencers, although the feds regulate that. No restriction on firearm type or caliber of general game hunting. No regulation of gun shows or firearm sales at gun shows. No permits for gun shows. Virtually no restrictions to shooting on public or private lands. Now, the reasons that I just went through that is because states like California and New York have regulations for every one of these things. Okay, so that shows you the dichotomy. Now, I want to just refer to one little, very important thing. Also, the Supreme Court has validated that the cops have no responsibility to protect you. Okay? So your police force is under no obligation to kind of answer the call or keep you from dying. Okay?
You're also under obligation to fund them.
Right.
Even though they're not under obligation to protect you.
Right. Okay, so that's where New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago has, and Illinois, to a large extent, a few other states, has put you. The Police ain't going to save your ass, and we're going to give you, we're going to make it a criminal offense if a law-abiding assistant, a citizen, tries to do it themselves with a weapon. Okay, so this is what I wanted to tell you about New York from somebody that I know personally. Okay, this person was traveling, and federal law, by the way, says you can travel from a state where your gun was legal to another state that was legal and pass through other states, and the states have to allow that. But anybody that wants to give you a hard time about guns and whose real aim is to get rid of guns, that's what they really want to do, okay, totally, and they've said as much, I'm talking about the real hardcore gun control people. So the feds say that, you know, you should not be arrested by the state and you have the right to do that. Okay, what does New York say? You got 24 hours, and New Jersey is basically the same. You got 24 hours to get through our state. If you stop, even, and some people have been arrested when they stop for a meal. If you stay overnight in a motel, you've committed a second-degree felony. Okay, so you come into New York, you got your gun in your suitcase, you go to a hotel, you stay overnight, you go back to the airport, follow all the regulations, you know, the feds have all these regulations, you declare it, they give you a slip, you sign that it's not loaded, you open it up to show them if you have to, you go through screening and everything else, and you've gone through screening to go there, they know you're going to New York. And when these, you know, when the TSA looks at the stuff, and something like in Atlanta, they have very special rooms and processes you go through and so on. Okay. So it's no secrets. Okay. Now you go to the air counter at Newark Airport or LaGuardia or wherever, and you go up to the counter and say, I want to declare a gun. What do? The first thing they do is call the cops. The cops ask you a question. Do you have a, you know, a New York State, New York City permit, if you're in New York City, because that's different than New York State, much more stringent. Well, you know, do you have a New Jersey permit if you're in New Jersey? Well, then do you, you know, how long have you been here? If it's more than 24 hours and 1 minute, you are locked up. And John Stossel even did a story about this. Okay. And if you're lucky and don't get 3.5 years in jail, mandatory sentence, there's no discretion from the police officers, and you can't work out a deal with the district attorney, you know, it's 3.5 years in jail. And if you do work out a deal, you got to spend 20 to 25 grand. And then they keep your gun. Even if they find that you're not guilty or they let you go or anything else, you'll never get that gun back. Okay? That is the state of affairs in New York City. Okay, and we'll have references for all this stuff also. So, the Constitution has been shredded when it comes to gun rights by the individual states with the permission of the courts and even the state legislatures. And they've done it sometimes with incredible enthusiasm. Now, when you look at the remarks that our forefathers have made about guns, and I've got a lot of them, and I'll put them on the list rather than go through them. It's very clear that you had the right to bear, carry a gun any way you wanted to, anywhere you wanted to, anytime you wanted to. That's how far we have come from that situation. So that's what I wanted to start out and say. And they are very, very clear. And just like the democide implies, that without your gun, you're a slave. As a matter of fact, don't take my word for it. The Supreme Court said the same thing in the Dred Scott case. They said if you're a slave, you can't have a weapon. As a matter of fact, guns are the mark of free people. That's why slaves can't be right. Have weapons.
Well, let me sit back, because there are a couple of things I want to tease out before we go on to sort of who wants gun control and why. But they overlap. The first thing, and I spent a lot of time in Control 101 in the third quarter wrap-up, hammering home one simple point. The governance structure, which is invisible, controls through force. Now, there's all sorts of front things to make that force from being obvious. You know, you have your financial system, you have legal system, you have mind control, you have all these different ways of implementing control without having to come out of the closet and be obvious about physical force. But ultimately, the entire governance structure rests on the ability to kill with impunity outside the law, whether it's war or, you know, assassination or covert, whatever.
Or kill overtly. I mean, basically, the laws allow you to do that, too, in many cases.
Well, I would argue the law doesn't allow, but they're certainly putting up a good front. So the reality is, part of our challenge in the United States, and the reason the United States is number one in the world in terms of gun ownership. So Switzerland is, as of 2007, was, 45 guns for every 100 people. We're 88, and we're number one. So, but one of the reasons is the government is basically running a criminal enterprise, and the honest citizens need guns to protect themselves from, the local distributors of the government's criminal enterprise. So there's a very sensitive balance of power in my neighborhood between the honest citizens and the people who are doing all the criminal work for the government. Essentially, it's when you look at the cash flow. So, and what's interesting is the guy in the middle of the whole thing is the sheriff. Now, we worked very hard to get a new sheriff elected. The sheriff, in fact, has jurisdiction ahead of the feds, and in the sheriff's jurisdiction under the Constitution, the sheriff is the supreme decider of the law within a jurisdiction. And we have a very good Salieri report I recommend to everybody that you ought to listen to called Who's Your Sheriff? And one of the challenges, when we voted in the new sheriff, one of the challenges he discussed in terms of the budget, we're in a big county, it's rural, and so it's going to take him 45 minutes on average to get a person. If you need help, it's going to take him 45 minutes to get somebody to you. Depending on where you are in the county, maybe it's less. But
yeah, one night, when my alarm was going off, Missoula County called me and said, the alarm people said, well, why don't you call the police department because they want to know if you want to come out? And they said, yeah, it'll be an hour and a half.
Right. So you're the enforcement for the first hour and a half.
There you go.
Right. And I have a great sheriff. So I love my sheriff. I have a great sheriff, but I'm the enforcement for the first 45 minutes. Now, one of the problems in the budget, which was lengthening that time out to 45 minutes, was the fact that the sheriff is also responsible to process foreclosures for the banks. So the banks were chewing up the budget of every sheriff in the country with the housing bubble. And that meant, however much time it took to get to protect you from, the government's local distributors, you were on your own.
Yeah, or how about marijuana arrests? How much time did that take?
I won't say anything about Tennessee, but here's what's interesting, because most Americans have been living in a period of peace and have been protected by the bubble. I was sitting on a panel with a great, a wonderful commentator who I really like, but very much on the sort of progressive side, who's always lived on the coasts and, grew up in a fairly well-off family, and they made a pitch for, we need gun control. And I said, well, apparently you don't want Social Security. And she looked at me and she said, the two things have nothing to do with each other. And she had absolutely no understanding that you bring in the guns and then they're free to raise taxes, cancel the Social Security. She had no understanding of the balance of power between the people running the country and the general population. None. She couldn't make the connection between gun ownership and our rights to enforce the law in a whole variety of ways.
I've got one for you. There's actually Supreme Court cases that show this. That basically, there's two types of ways that government can enforce regulations about land. One is eminent domain, where they have to pay you for doing it, and the other is
right,
where they don't pay you. And right. It is looked at as an extension of police power. Right. This is zoning, land use zoning issues is an extension of police power defined by the Supreme Court.
I believe the reason that Biden and Obama made such a push after, I'm trying to remember which election it was, 2012, I think they had promised the whole world people who wanted to use the housing bubble to grab massive amounts of land all over the country, you know, who were going to use police powers to do it. You know, so you're going to turn asset seizure loose on the whole land and housing use issue, and you were going to be able to seize thousands and thousands of acres, and they wanted to make sure nobody had any guns because they were afraid to do it if they did. And that's why I thought that fight in 2013 was worth going to the wall for, because if you allowed that to happen, you were going to see land switching ownership and control that was going to be one of the most frightening things you ever saw.
Okay. Now, have you made all the points you wanted to? Because I wanted to add one thing.
I have one other point I wanted to make. And that is, if you go through the history of where gun control has been instituted, you know, it's a surprising number where, before the genocides that you were describing, you know, a couple things happened beforehand, one of which is they institute gun control. So Hitler instituted gun control in the 30s at about the same time he hired IBM to do all the databases, because the other thing you need to do is create a database. If you're going to round up and kill 21 million people, you know, you need to put together an intelligence operation to help you do that.
And we will have a list, we will have the actual Nazi weapons law of November 11, 1938 as one of our, you know, that basically restricted Jews from having guns. We'll have that, you know, as a reference as part of this.
Right. And the other thing I wanted to bring up is when I was in Washington in the late 80s and 90s, we experienced an explosion of the number of federal agencies that were, one, allowed to carry a gun, and two, allowed to make arrests. So at the same time, you're pushing for an enormous decrease in gun ownership and rights by the citizenry, you're pushing an explosion of gun rights, gun carrying by federal agencies. I mean, I think it was, the last time I checked, it was over 52 sort of different groups of federal agents could carry a gun, and I think most of them can make arrests and institute fines. But what you were talking about was a very conscious effort to fundamentally shift the balance of power between the government and the citizenry in a way that would make it possible, in essence, to engineer the financial coup d'etat and then take the land.
And there was a major effort for militarizing police, which is continuing today. The amount of ammunition that was bought,
right.
The type of weaponry, including assault rifles,
right.
So-called. But real
right.
Assault rifles, these are one that actually you can select to automatic fire. You know, this they were stockpiling it too, you know, as well as you know, the types of bullets that were banned by the Geneva Convention and all this other stuff. And then somebody just asked, well, wait a minute, you guys are not involved Homeland Security with, like, fighting foreign wars. You're supposed to be guarding the homeland. So I guess this is, like, for the citizenry, right? Which, of course, it is.
Right.
Because then when you take a look at the potential problem causes and potential domestic terrorists, how they described them, basically, if, you know, you went to church, you homeschooled, you know, you believed in the Constitution, you know, you were a potential terrorist threat. Actually, you can see documents. We'll list that, too, as a... But one of the things I wanted to mention...
I have one other thing I wanted to go into.
Good,
so
go
let
ahead.
Me, let me do that first, and
yep.
Then we go. You know, I've said this many times in the Salary Report, but I'll say it again. Obviously, I'm a gun owner. I'm passionate about being a gun owner. And if you told me that I couldn't own a gun, I mean, if I went on a trip and came back and discovered that all my guns had been seized and I had been stripped of my guns and ammunition, I would leave. I couldn't stay here. It wouldn't be safe. Because, as I said, there's a balance of power right now between the honest citizens and the and the, you know, the local drug gangs who distribute drugs, and they have guns, and the minute, you know, we have to give up our guns, they're still going to have guns, and they're moving in. I mean, the you know, it's not the establishment who's going to come and shoot me. It's not their police who's going to come and shoot me. It's going to be their covert operations that are suddenly said, okay, free range, you know,
there's
fun.
There's many, many things to, because the forefathers addressed this, you know, many people have addressed it beforehand that, you know, you take away the guns, you know, only the criminals are the one that end up with guns. But what I would say is just a general... This is every question I've looked into that has been brought up by the gun control people, who have now relabeled themselves as the gun safety people and the gun health people. You know, every one of their claims has been false that I've looked into in some way, but oftentimes in some major way. It doesn't matter. Anything they talk about, Australia, the UK, how many people were killed. And so we're going to have four or five sites that we're going to refer to. But to me, you know, one of the best ones is John Lott's site, you know, where he basically is now the best researcher to me in terms of debunking all this stuff. But we'll have the Second Amendment Foundation. You know, we'll have Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. You have Jews for the Preservation of Firearm Ownership, which is one of your favorite organizations, and they've done a fantastic article, which I'll refer to specifically. You got John Lott's, you know, John Lott's group, and then you got Gun Owners of America, and then NRA, I would kind of put last, because these other guys, to me, are higher quality. So I don't want to spend the time to go down, you know, the 100 different arguments or 500 that they love to put out there, okay? These guys have done a fantastic job, and Lott was actually one of the first one, along with Klieg, you know, to Gary Kleck, actually, was another one, you know, to really go to data and disprove all the crap that was out there. But the bottom line is, gun control works against the law-abiding citizen in every case that they came up with. That's the bottom line.
So I just want to say one other thing, because I put up a review of Point Blank, and I've republished it at various times. It's Gary Kleck, who's a professor of criminology, last time I looked at Florida State University. And it was originally published in 1993, so it's a little bit dated, but it won the... Michael J. Hindenburg Award of the American Society of Criminology for the book that was the most outstanding contribution to criminology, criminology that year. So it's, I mean, it's a very serious, exceptionally well done study, and a lot of great statistics. And the point it makes again and again is there is no doubt about it that the law-abiding citizen is so much better off and so much safer with gun ownership. And the thing that's amazing, Harry, it really brings home the point, women are so much safer.
Huge,
so if
huge
you're
point.
Into this promoting women and women's rights things, for God's sakes, you better be for gun ownership. You know, because it's basic.
Absolutely, 100%.
Right.
There's many, many things we can say to address these specific questions, but like, would gun control laws have prevented the assassination of President Kennedy, RFK, MLK, John Lennon, the Orlando Vegas shooting, or Sandy Hook? No, none of that.
No.
Especially since probably most of it was done by the government anyways, or, you know, the secret teams that are part of the government. But here's one for you. How many people know about Haynes versus the U.S., a 1968 U.S. Supreme Court decision? A person who is prohibited from having a gun can't be required, cannot be required to register that gun, because that would be self-incrimination. So gun laws can only be applied to people who don't break the law. You know, I mean, you get into this thing, and there's one thing after another like this that just you basically have to laugh at.
Here's what I would encourage the listener to do. So we're going to put up, and Harry's described great references. There's a tremendous amount of highly credible information and very good experts who can really help you understand the very complex nuts and bolts of this whole issue. But as Harry said, what I will say is what they all basically come down to, the bottom line on all of it, is the law-abiding citizen is much better off for the presence of the Second Amendment and the enforcement of the Second Amendment and the existence of gun ownership.
And by the way, the forefathers never expected there to be a wide gap between the power, the ability to bring force by the government versus the ability to bring force by the citizenry. Okay? That's very important to understand.
Yes. This is a balance of power issue. Absolutely. So let's move on. I want to talk about several issues. You know, so I'm going to start with who's pushing for gun control, but then I want to talk about how we protect gun ownership, and then should I own a gun? What are the pros and cons of owning a gun? So let's talk about who's pushing for gun control, because in my opinion, the government, certainly the government isn't pushing for gun control for itself. I always say, you know, when Obama was president, I was like, okay, when Obama tells his Secret Service detail for himself and his family to no longer carry guns, then let's talk. So you institute gun control for the federal government, and then we can talk about it. But so we know the government's not in charge. Who's pushing for gun control? You know, if you listen to Chuck Schumer, the intelligence agencies are in charge and the CIA is in charge. So who do they work for? Who's pushing this? Who wants gun control?
Okay, so one thing I would say is we're going to have as a resource a paper from the Capital Research Center that talks about exactly this subject, the gun ban lobby and its funders. Now, you're talking about a whole other dimension, too, of the covert world and the real puppet masters. But these guys talk about, they list 10 or 11 major organizations, how much money they put towards this thing. But then the most important thing is that they talk about a whole list of other players. 141 organizations, 237 actors, and 26 national figures who've lent their resources, names to the anti-gun agenda, along with basically all your journalists and you know, the news media that's pretty much across the board against your gun rights, with rare exceptions. And so you end up with a huge constituency of well-funded people, actors, personalities, and so on, that are trying to convince you that we need intelligent gun laws. Now, this is it's a medical issue. It's a public health
this
issue.
This is the new push.
This is the higher mind push. That's right. And this is about gun safety. It's not about gun control. And of course we don't want to fill in the blank, which of course just wait 10 years like California's doing, and they're doing it. Okay, so you have to understand, you know, evil exists, they have a plan, but also your government can't be trusted. Okay, just ask the Indians. You know, that's what one of the, but you could even ask Iran, you know, because they were just meeting with Syria, I think, or Egypt or somebody, and the Ayatollah was telling him, you can't trust the United States, which is our biggest problem in the world. We don't honor our agreements. We double cross your ass, you know. You never really know where we're coming from, and that's dealing with our foreign foreign people. Then you wake up one day and you find out that you've got basically troops that are fighting wars and advising people in almost every country in Africa, I think, except one. Well, they're probably there too.
Right.
So you can't believe anything these guys say, and they have proven time and time again that when they say, oh, we don't want to take your gun, oh, we don't want to it is just a matter of time before they're doing it, and they use any crisis to justify it.
Now, you know, I have to ask you this question just because we need to bring this up. I have throughout my career you know, my second career in independent media, run into an extraordinary number of people who really believe that they will be better off if they have gun control. Now, they have not really thought about the issue. They haven't studied the statistics. They really don't have a command of the details of this whole issue. They just think that they would like a world that's more peaceful. And their theory is that, you know, guns shoot and kill people, or they're used to shoot and kill people. And if we have gun control, they'll be much better off. So this started for me I started doing radio shows in 1998. And when I left Washington, I was still in Washington at that time, but as I left Washington, if you had said to me, I only have time to fight on one issue, what would it be? I would say, you know, in addition to the missing money, gun control. Because, you know, if you don't, you know, they can steal money out of the federal till, but they can't steal money out of your bank account as long as you own a gun. So, and a lot of Americans own a gun, I should say.
Okay, so, right. So people make the illogical conclusion that I don't want to get shot. I don't want my friends to get shot.
Right.
I don't want, you know, my community to get shot up. Oh, you mean you don't want criminals to perform criminal acts with guns that end the violent acts with guns or violent acts at all, right? Okay. And right. Now, can I just ask one little quick question here? Is murder legal? Is it legal? Is it legal to do these? So there are laws. There's lots of laws, right? And there's very stiff penalties.
Right. But they're not being enforced.
That's right. That's one
Those
of the problems.
Laws are not being enforced.
That's one of the problems.
Right.
But there are laws, lots of laws already, that prevent the Vegas guy from doing what he did, right? Okay. So
right.
Tell me again now how more regulations of guns that are going to prevent you, from having a gun. Not the criminals, you. Okay? How is that going to help the situation? And then I would also just ask somebody, okay, you're with your kid. This happens. Your car, somebody tries to hijack your car. Somebody pulls a knife or a gun and wants to steal your kid. Somebody, basically, you're in your home at night alone with your kid and somebody's breaking in. What's your plan? I just want to understand. What's your plan to protect yourself and protect your kid? Okay? Now, if your plan is to shoot somebody with some pepper spray in your purse and you can't find the damn thing, and it's a spray that, you know, these guys use for mouthwash, it's not real stuff, or is it to press a button that puts out a siren noise, or, you know, what's the plan? That's all I want to know. Because you know there's violence out there, right?
Right.
You know, people do all these things. What is your plan tomorrow when you have
right.
to confront?
You need to have a plan.
When you confront
right.
this situation.
It's much more complicated than do you have a gun or not. It's
right.
It's going to be much more complicated than that, but you absolutely need a plan.
So people that are responsible with guns, they practice a lot. They practice much more than law enforcement practices. I'm not talking about special forces
right.
and SWAT teams, but they probably even practice more than those guys do. Okay? They also spend a fair amount of time on tactics. They go over scenarios in their head. They
right.
understand the conditions of their weapons. They know how
right.
to handle them safely. They are
right.
clean. They're operable. Any time that they go out, they understand exactly, you know, how the weapon is, where it's located, what's in it, how, you know, they also have a plan about if something goes wrong. That's what responsible people do. Much, much more work goes in from responsible gun holders, gun carriers and so on, than anybody does for driving. I want to be a good driver,
right.
so I spent lots of money learning how to drive, you know, because
right.
I thought I knew how to drive, okay? Just like I spent a fair amount of time over the years with good people teaching me how to use a gun properly, okay? So
right.
the other thing people have to understand is your problem isn't me with a gun permit, you know, for the 0.4% of the places I needed in Montana.
Right.
That's carrying a gun concealed. I am the best friend you have if you get in a jam. Okay? The 3 million or 5 million people that carry guns regularly and the millions of others that have concealed carry permits are the most law-abiding citizens they are. As a matter of fact, the people that own machine guns legally are 100 times more than they are, even. Okay?
Right.
Because you got to get fingerprinted, you got to get all kinds of forms, you got to let the sheriff know, you got to, you know, there's just gigantic amounts of stuff. You can't own anything beyond 1986, and most of those people are collectors. Okay? So, those are the people that are the most law abiding. Not only that, they're the most capable of helping you if you get in a jam. And there's, as a matter of fact, and Lott will tell you this, now I think it's up to 2.5 million times a year a gun is used to stop a crime. 2.5 million times that potentially could have saved a life, saved severe damage to you or somebody that you care about. Do they get reported? No. Very, very rarely do they get reported, but there's very good statistical methods that they use, you know, for figuring this stuff out. So just keep that in mind when you try to make me your problem and me your enemy and people like me.
So I believe I'm among that 2.5 million, not this year, but a couple of years ago. So, I can't imagine living without owning a gun. I just can't imagine.
Sure, you've told me stories where it's very important that you have it. And, you know, my concern is that you have to worry about taking it with you where you go because there's such, you know, abnormal weirdness in some of the states that you might be going through. So, you know, the states and the country have made it so that you are not safe outside of a very small area where you feel comfortable protecting yourself.
Right. Although, you know, it's interesting because when I travel in Europe and Asia, I feel very safe. But here I don't, you know, here it's much. And here's the reality. You know, the whole financial system and the government are highly dependent financially on running networks of gangs all over the country. You know, so you've got enormous institutional support for criminal networks. And, you know, I've shared many stories of encountering them, you know, personally. But it's a problem because, for example, if you look at the Fast and Furious scandal, you have the Department of Justice basically distributing guns to criminal networks who are working our neighborhoods. Anyway, I'm repeating myself.
You're not repeating yourself. You're not repeating yourself because the fundamental question is, why would any sane person want to make a victim out of you in the name of trying to make your life better? Why would you let somebody do that to you with all the lessons, with all the data that's out there, with our Constitution, with the clarity that our forefathers have addressed this issue? Don't leave yourself defenseless against scum, against the devil, against your government. Don't do it. You will become a slave. Okay? The message is as loud and clear as you can possibly deliver it. And if you're a Jew, and a Hasidic Jew, an Orthodox Jew, whatever the heck kind of Jew you are living in New York City, how did you let these guys take your gun away after Nazi Germany? How did you let that happen, guys? How?
They probably believe they don't have to comply.
Yeah, Bloomberg, ain't you Jewish? How did you do this to your Jewish buddies?
I happen to believe that the reasons we had a financial coup d'etat, you shifted all the money out of Global 2.0. Now you have the liabilities, whether it's military pensions, Social Security, and you wanna re-engineer all of that and basically cut everybody's money one way or another and grab a lot of land, you need to pull in the guns.
Okay, and so here you go.
So there is a direct relationship between our property rights and protecting our property rights and gun ownership, whether I own a gun or not, but the general population. And that's really what this is about. And they're coming after it in every way possible, including how I started this conversation, what I call the baby seal people, who show up and say, oh, I want peace and love, and this is terrible. Guns hurt people. We don't need guns. We need to love each other. I call them the baby seal people. That used to be our nickname for them in the campaign. I have another friend who calls them the four chakra people. But it, you know, it's a very emotional thing, and it sounds wonderful if you know nothing about the facts of gun ownership and gun statistics.
I know we want peace. So. We want peace, no question about it, and that's why we spend $1.1 trillion on military-related stuff this year. It's in the budget. $1.1 trillion. Right. So, baby seal people, Democrats, all you people that are for, you know, protecting rights and safety, let's call back our military from all their imperialistic adventures around the world. Let's find out who really did 9/11, because it sure isn't the way that they described it. Let's find out those secret teams that blew Kennedy's head off in Dealey Plaza because he basically wanted peace or wanted to let people know about aliens, whatever the heck it was, and not go to Vietnam. Let's find out who these criminals are that have basically been shaping our policy here for the last 7 years. FBI, why don't you do that? Why don't you take a look at the Zapruder film where those Secret Service guys, you know, slow down intentionally in the kill zone and keep looking back to make sure Kennedy's head is blown off? It's right in front of your face, all the criminality. Let's get rid of that criminality.
Here's the reality. If I can't get gun control, then the best way for me to get gun control, you know, other than death by a thousand cuts, state by state by state, is for me to get a constitutional convention, and then once I open it up, tear up the Constitution.
And it's also
that's how I get gun
and it's
control.
Also to do what you're going to talk about in Control 101, because I will just go back to Brzezinski's statement. You know, he says at one point it was easier to control people than it was a million people than it was to kill a million people. Now it's easier to kill a million people than it is to control them. We are now going to where now it's going to be easier to control them than to kill them. And when you have all these other control mechanisms, you have ingrained criminality, you're going to give up the last thing you've got that can provide any sort of equalization of force, despite the fact that you're incredibly unequalized force right now. The only thing, except there's one good hope. All those terrorists around the world have proven that asymmetrical force can work against big, big aggressors with big budgets and high, you know, high-class machinery. Okay?
Right.
Those Afghan guys with AK-47s in the mountains, you know, just like the Japanese talked about in World War II. We can't invade the mainland. There's people with rifles behind every blade of grass, you know? So the point is, you can't give that up. That's one of the few things you got left.
Right. So let's talk about how we protect it. I believe that education and transparency is one of the first things, which is why it's so important. I've seen so many people who, when I first met them, were adamant that they wanted gun control, really turned around by learning the facts and completely looking at it in a whole new way. And I think education and transparency around this issue can make a huge difference.
Okay, so you'll have all those resources as part of the your footnotes here. And almost any question you want to ask that's been put forward by these gun control, gun health, and, you know, gun safety advocates is basically answered, and almost every time it's basically refuted or at least show you that it's not at all the way that they claim the situation is.
Right. Now, the second thing I want to say, and you've already mentioned this, is it's exceptionally important where you live in terms of state and city. So I live in Tennessee, and one of the reasons I live in Tennessee is I'm a member of the Tennessee Firearms Association, and I'll never forget the first time I saw a presentation by, it was the lead lobbyist for the Tennessee Firearms Association. It was one of the most impressive presentations I've ever seen in my life. this guy was, as a lot of these guys are, very nuts and bolts knowledge about the law and reality on the ground in Tennessee. And one of the things he said is the population that votes is this number of people, and our membership is more than 50%. And our goal is to have more than 50% in every county. And what that means is our political clout in terms of this issue in this state is extraordinary. And I said, you know, that is a compelling argument to live in Tennessee. It was interesting. And, of course, we have a very high rate of gun ownership, particularly including because of the hunting. And I think there's tremendous variation, as you've described, state to state. So you want to be in a state where they have a real cultural and legal commitment to the Second Amendment. So I think that is very important, especially for people who are considering moving. You know, you want to think about that.
Yes, and it needs to be like a state that respects that now, not like Boston, Massachusetts, you know, the seat of the revolution for our freedom that has now become basically a fascist right. police state when it comes to gun laws.
Right. So here's my other concern. I want to talk about my big concern about guns and gun ownership. You know, I've spent a lot of time in Control 101 talking, and I've spent a lot of time on the Slayer Report talking about mind control. And in fact, the show that we're going to have the week before we publish gun ownership, I'm going to be talking with Melissa and Aaron Dykes about all their incredible work on TruSteam TV about mind control. Now, I can have a gun, but if you can manipulate and control my mind, you know, that can be a scary or dangerous situation. So I've talked a lot about the movie The Kingsman, and literally what happens if you can control people's mind. You know, I believe some of the school and church shootings have been Manchurian candidates. Basically, you're dealing with mind control. So we're operating in an environment where mind control is becoming more and more prevalent and more impacting the general population is what I believe. And so if we're going to have guns around, we've got to be very cognizant of the danger and influence of mind control and find ways to protect ourselves from it. And guns can't do that.
And guns can't stop a laser beam from outer space, you know, zapping you in your car, or somebody getting into the electronics of your smart device or whatever it is and turning it against you, and on. So that's what we're looking at here. It's gotten so bizarre in terms of the government against the people, and
right.
that. What are you going to do? Just get on the train to the concentration camp? I mean, and you could say, well, that's a huge exaggeration. Is it really? Is it really?
Well, I don't think it's a huge exaggeration because, as you know, I have serious questions about fires, both in this country and in Europe, being really created by directed energy weapons or something like that. So I'm very concerned about, you know, high tech, and you know, I've been the target during the litigation. I was the target of electromagnetic weaponry. That's how I first got onto it. So I was the target of entrainment technology applied on the phone. So, you know, that was sort of my crash course in some of these technologies because I really didn't understand that they existed. In 1994, there was a memorandum of understanding between DOD and Department of Justice to prototype non-lethal weapon applications in the U.S. And suddenly you had this blossoming of targeted individuals talking about, you know, all this weird technology. So, but I still think, so it means that a gun owner needs to be cognizant of this stuff. But at the same time, you know, I still believe that gun ownership has a very significant contribution to the balance of power between them and us.
And then also, I mean, the point is, the weirder stuff gets, the weirder people are going to act. So you're going to have more and more incidents where it would be very, very helpful to have a force multiplier, a force equalizer, especially if you're a woman.
Right. So I want to come back to this. I've said this several times during the conversation, but I'm going to say it again. Because the way that the establishment enforces, so if it's a legal enforcement, I can send in the cops. But if there's no legal basis to do that, I send in the covert guys. Now, the covert guys could be the local drug gang. It could be the local stringer. It could be the local businessman who's got a control file. There's all sorts of different types of covert enforcers. But essentially what they do, so if you're someone like Catherine Austin Fitz and you create Community Wizard, what you do is you create a phony baloney scandal and then you say to the mob, here's one of us, you can kill her. And you get the general population to kill, you know, the person you want to target. So you're always trying to get somebody who looks like the general population. You know, to the extent that I've had real physical attacks on my property, it's, you know, it's the local drug gang. It's not, you know, it doesn't look like the Department of Justice. It doesn't look like the CIA. But it's somebody who's on a very tight leash. You know, they don't go run around and do this for the most part without someone upstairs saying, have at it. So, you know, it's when the orders come down from on top, you know, you feel free to kill this one.
The mafia was, this is not, you know, fiction. This has been proven many, many times over. The mafia was basically the hit squad for the CIA internally in this country, domestically.
Right.
And the FBI.
Right. 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 So that's why when you think about the risk issues and how you're going to manage the risk issues, you need to think about it with the complexity that I've tried to provide with Control 101. So, which brings us to the question, should I own a gun? And what are the do's and don'ts?
Well, the first thing is,
let me ask you, should I own a gun?
Well, the first thing is, you got to say, are you prepared to use a gun? Okay, right. And that means, are you prepared to use deadly force to prevent somebody else from basically killing you, somebody that you love, or creating huge damage to your body? Okay, that's the first thing. You got to ask yourself that question. And then the second thing is, okay.
And there can be, let me tell you something, there can be no ambivalence. If you have 1 ounce of ambivalence, it could cost you your life. Because there is nothing worse than having a gun, not using it, and having a bad guy take it away from you. I've seen that kill people.
Okay, then the second thing is,
you have to be 100% clear, no ambivalence.
Second thing is, are you prepared to train so that you can use that weapon effectively? Now, that
right.
That is a major, major commitment. Okay, because when you start taking a look at statistics, you know, about gunfights and how they really happen in the real world, they happen fast. They happen relatively close. They happen oftentimes in subdued light. They happen oftentimes with multiple attackers. Oh, but all you need is a six shooter.
Wrong.
Yeah. and you have to be able to basically access the weapon, perform with the weapon, oftentimes on multiple targets, very, very quickly and with good judgment, and at the same time making sure you don't hurt anybody else except the people that you intend to stop from hurting you. Okay? Now, if you're not prepared to do that, then don't carry it. You know, maybe leave it in the house or something, but you really shouldn't have it on your side walking around the streets. Okay? And
it's
then
a big responsibility.
That's right. And then, you know, are you committed to keeping not only your mind and your body and your use of this thing in shape, but also the weapon itself in shape, so that it's clean, it's the right ammunition.
Right.
You take it out. You rotate the ammunition. And are you prepared, if you have kids in your house, to basically educate them in terms of gun safety and keep the gun safe but yet accessible.
Right.
So you know, the state in the UK and even now states monitor what they define what that is. And basically, if you ever had to use the weapon, forget it, you know, to keep your kid safe. But in Montana, you know, my neighbor has a 4-year-old kid that he takes out hunting with him. Okay, so from a very early age, they get guns, they know about guns, they know about gun safety, they know about the potential of guns for good and for harm. And, you know, there's 3 or 4 very basic rules about gun safety. You just always have to practice them. You know, guns are always loaded. Don't point at something right. You don't want to kill. Keep your finger off the trigger till you're ready to use it. And be aware of your background and foreground. So that's right. It. You've got to. So those questions have to be answered first.
The training commitment and the education commitment is much greater if you have kids in the house. You really have to be careful. But you're right. I live in a neighborhood where parents spend a great deal of time making sure their kids are educated, they're good at gun safety, and to my knowledge, there's never been a problem. But it's a major, major commitment, because the last thing you want to do is have a gun around, you know, and to have kids who are not trained and not capable of, you know, who don't have the emotional maturity to be in a house where there are guns.
And then the last thing
very,
I say,
very important.
So then what I say, okay, if you said yes to all those questions, then I've got this question. Well, why the hell wouldn't you want a gun?
I'll tell you what my concern, I went through a period where I was a target of the feds during the litigation, and I wouldn't have a gun in the house. And I kept my guns over at my cousin's house, and I wouldn't allow a gun in the house. And the reason was, I thought I would be suicided or framed with a gun. So I felt I was safer without it. Now, that's a special situation, but...
That's right. So that's a special situation, and my question is,
right.
Outside of those special situations, which you and I, I'm sure, could come up with a fair amount of, you know, why would you not want one if you basically have said yes to your commitment to use it, your commitment to train, your commitment to keep it workable, your commitment to keep it safe and other people safe? Why would you not want one?
I can't imagine. Now, one of the things I will say, when I'm in Europe with friends who live there and can't fathom wanting a gun, you know, they really don't need one so far. And they, you know, they can't. Or when I was in New Zealand, I remember having lunch with a wonderful person in Auckland, very sophisticated, accomplished person. And they said, you know, the only problem with your country is you have these gun nuts who absolutely make no sense. They're nuts. And I said, well, I'm one of them. And they almost fell off their seat. And what? I said, absolutely. And then I said, let me explain to you why I'm one of them. And, you know, it took a half an hour, and his mouth was on the floor the whole time. He was like, oh, my God.
Okay, well, let me tell you one thing. I don't feel safe without the ability to protect myself. And in Europe, the biggest mass shootings by far have happened in Europe. Okay?
Right.
And there is a lot of crime that you've got to be able to basically be prepared to protect yourself against, and they don't give you the right to protect yourself in most of those places.
Right. Well, here's what's interesting. You know, from the moment they took out Libya and they unplugged the cork on Africa, and the immigration has overwhelmed Europe, it's completely changed. And so there are many places where 5 years ago, folks couldn't conceive of wanting a gun, where now they do.
That's right. And then
so that's changing.
And I'll also mention this, that the United States is the only place with the gun laws that we have, guaranteed in the Constitution the way that they are, as basically unrestrictive as the Second Amendment states it. The only country in the world. Okay. Now, I would also mention this. Everybody tries to use the UK as an example, Australia and all these other places as an example. Okay. The UK doesn't have a codified constitution. So when Piers Morgan was on and everything else, what I would have said is, I don't even want to talk to you about this. You guys don't even have a written constitution. Okay? You can't participate in the discussion. Now, let me make another point clear. I'm just going to play this. This is the oath of office that Justin Trudeau took as Canadian Prime Minister. Now, basically everybody that's associated with the Crown, you know, where all these laws came from, common laws and Black's Law and all this other stuff that was supposedly the foundation for our Second Amendment, this is where it comes from. This, just listen for a minute for his oath of office.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau, do swear that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, Queen of Canada, her heirs and successors. So help me God. I, Justin P.J. Trudeau, do solemnly and sincerely swear that I shall be a true and faithful servant to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II as a member of Her Majesty's Privy Council for Canada. I will, in all things to be treated, debated, and resolved in Privy Council, faithfully, honestly, and truly declare my mind and my opinion. I shall keep secret all matters committed and revealed to me in this capacity, or that shall be secretly treated of in council. Generally, in all things, I shall do as a faithful and true servant ought to do for Her Majesty, so help me God.
Okay, so we'll have that flip there. That's exactly what the forefathers didn't want.
Well, Trudeau works, if you look at the legal structure of the Commonwealth, Trudeau works for the Commonwealth shareholders, and the Queen basically, you know, it's a trust that it owns the equity, and that's the structure. Now, that's not our legal structure.
But they're making an oath of office for the Canadian Prime Minister so that he is saying in his oath he will keep things secret from the people he's representing when basically in any type of interactions with the Queen. So that's...
Well, what he's saying is I represent the investors, not the people.
Okay. That's exactly what this country wanted to get away from. Today, they're taking an oath that basically we fought, you know, 250 years ago to get away from.
We are not taking that oath. We have not taken that oath. That's Canada.
No, but what I'm saying is...
It's not part of the Commonwealth.
You can't participate in the discussion with me about my Second Amendment rights. You cannot participate in the discussion because you are have no constitution. You have taken an oath of loyalty to a monarch over the people, and you have taken an oath of secrecy that honors the monarchy right. Instead of the people. You, I want nothing to do with you. You don't have the same basic approach to freedom that I do. You cannot participate in the conversation. Just like I'm not interested in talking with Hitler about how we should run our government. Not interested. Okay? So you got to understand, in this world of secrecy, of where equity is controlled behind curtains you can't even get to, where you have intelligence agencies and covert world that basically dominates policy, you've got a constitution, one of the few remaining in the world, that gives you certain rights. You need to defend the constitution. And one of the most important basic rights that guarantees your ability to have all those other ones is the Second Amendment and your right to keep and bear arms and your obligation to do it. Your obligation. They looked at it as an obligation to do it.
Whether you own a gun or not, gun ownership is about stopping the autism epidemic. It's about stopping Common Core. It's about stopping the missing money. It's about all these different issues of human and property rights.
And I'll tell you, that's right. And it's about the deacons, you know, the deacons, the blacks that basically use their guns to protect from the Ku Klux Klan, the blacks down in the South. And it's also about something that happened in Tennessee. I didn't understand about the Tennessee Revolution. Do you know about that? in Wynn County, where the corrupt sheriff basically took over the town, confiscated the ballot boxes, shot somebody that was overseeing the polls, and basically the citizenry took up arms. They were ex-veterans coming back from World War II, and it said, we didn't see our buddies die for this, and they basically shot up the sheriff's place, you know, blew up the front door, took the ballot boxes back, counted out, and the man got in. But so it's, and that wasn't that long ago in your state.
Wasn't one of my theories during, you know, because I'm always interested in where has the general population, where have we won? And, you know, homeschooling is a perfect example, but I'm always talking with Franklin Sanders about, okay, Franklin, what works? Where have we won? You know, what can we learn from that? And it was very interesting because when the swine flu vaccine first came out, I thought, oh, this is very bad. I'm not 100% certain about what this is, but I think it's very, very bad. And they, you know, they started to mandate it state by state, and they started with Massachusetts. And I thought, okay, here it comes. They're really going to push to mandate this by states. So I published an article very early on saying swine flu is about depopulation. That's the goal, and that's what I believe, you know, boom. And a lot of the medical people came out very early, and so there was fierce resistance, and the battle on this state mandate was, you know, you could tell Mr. Global had said, get this done. I want this done. So I called Franklin Sanders because I was really worrying about what was my plan. You know, I wanted to make sure I had a plan. And I said, look, Franklin, I am not taking the swine flu vaccine. I'm not taking it. So if they mandate it in Tennessee, which I don't expect, but if they do, can I bring my guns and come over there? Because I'm going to die in a gunfight. I'm not having this vaccine, and I'd rather die in a gunfight with you than do it alone. And he said, oh, yeah, we're going to have a gunfight. So come on over. Just get your guns and come on over. And I realized, you know, and then it died. You know, they gave up, they stopped pushing. And I think it's because they heard thousands of those conversations.
And that's the point. That in the end, if you're well-armed, well-trained, and that gives you a certain ambiance, it gives you a certain karma, it gives you a certain, you know, you project yourself a certain way when you have that type of self-confidence.
Right.
People don't mess right. with you. That's the other thing that you find out. You end up finding out that you rarely have to use the force because you're prepared to use the force.
Right. Right. It's the like the story I told you when I backed out the sort of druggy guy out of my property. I was so confident because I was two steps away and he was going to be dead.
And he saw
and
it in your eyes.
Could feel it.
He saw it in your eyes.
He saw it. He felt it. And he got scared to death. You know, because I have no idea who tugged his leash and said, go do this. But what he realized was they lied to him. he ran. He backed out. I've never seen anybody back out of my driveway faster than that guy.
And the criminals will tell you they fear an armed victim, a potential victim who refuses to
right.
be a victim much more than they do the cops, more than they do getting caught.
Right, because we're... You know, I think we're the most confident. There's nothing like a well-trained law-abiding citizen. They are the most clear and confident. You know, they don't have to live with it every day like the cops, but when it comes, they're ready. And
they're also more responsible. They don't drink, you know, you're not supposed to drink. You're not supposed to carry it into a
right.
bar here. You know, you're going to be, if you have any sense at all, which of course most of them do, you understand the liabilities involved. Your problems just begin after you've protected yourself, okay?
Right.
And so
right.
you're going to go out of your way to avoid the use of deadly force. But you're going to be prepared if you have to.
Where you train and how you train depends on where you are and the state you're in. But I know the NRA and a lot of these groups have training programs. Do you have any thoughts on how I figure out, given what my state is, how do I figure out who gives the best training where I am?
I'll get you a site that says, you know, where the gun ranges are. Generally, those people have. But let me put it bluntly. You want to get trained to a proficiency that exceeds law enforcement. That's what I want to tell you. Okay, and to do that, you need special training. So I'll also list some schools in the country that go a step beyond. And some of these guys, actually, the special forces actually train with, because oftentimes the private guys end up developing techniques and so on that are even more effective. And so if you want to be serious about it, you just have to, you know, you have to go another level. You just can't do the NRA training, even though that's a good place to start. And the other thing I would tell you is, a handgun is looked at, it was described to me by somebody out of the Jeff Cooper School, who was thought of as the father of modern gunfighting. He wasn't exactly, but, you know, it's the Roman short sword equivalent. It's the equivalent of the Roman short sword. It has a very particular use. It has a very limited use. It has a very important use. But it's, the guys that really are into this will say, yes, the handgun is used to fight your way to your rifle. So
right.
It's not just the handgun that if you're really interested in protecting yourself, you know, and you can ask those Korean guys during the LA riots, you know, you need to also be prepared, especially here in Montana, you need to be prepared to know how to use a rifle and use it effectively. And that's not a double barrel shotgun, Mr. Biden, I'm sorry. You know, it's something that can fire accurately, multiple rounds of stuff, semi-automatically, you know, when you get in a jam, because that's what the cops want. That's what they want.
Right.
That's what the citizen needs when they get in a jam. Same thing.
Right. Well, it's kind of, you know, what I know is in many areas, your problem is that if somebody breaks into your house, if you have a home invasion, it's not going to be one guy. It's going to be three guys.
That's right.
Or four guys.
Especially if they know that you're there.
It's going to be, yeah, they're going to be a team.
But if you're in Montana, if
your handgun is not going to work.
If you're in Montana, well, it may work, but the point is you got an advantage with the rifle in most situations. If you're in Montana, they know you're home, they know you're likely armed, and people are breaking into your house, you got a serious problem.
Right.
Right. So I
just have to tell the story of staying at your house, and you were leaving before I was, so I was going to be there a night or two, you know, alone. And I came walking into my bedroom, and there was a Glock with an extension that had 27 bullets. And I said, "That is so sweet."
Well, you know,
it's the sweetest thing that anybody just about has ever done for me.
If I was really classy, I would have put a bow around it. So what else we got?
What else? Was it? Was it sage? I couldn't remember what it was, but it was.
So what else would you like to cover? Anyway. Because from here, you know, you can look at our references that we're going to have associated with the site. And then, you know, your control 101 is going to be very, very important to creating context about what we're up against.
Right. So you need to consider this, particularly the do's and don'ts for you and your family, given some of the other things we've discussed in control 101. But I do think it's funny. I was reading a wonderful letter from somebody today who was talking about how they have always done all the things you could do without taking a lot of risk. And they said, but look at what's going on. And they listed, you know, many different things that are happening in their community, in their state. And they said, you know, it's getting to the point where it's riskier to not do something. You know, all the things that I didn't do because they're risky, it's getting riskier to not do them than to do them. And I think, you know, we are coming through a period where it's exceptionally important for every one of us to have a plan about how we're going to be safe and deal effectively with a variety of different stressful circumstances, whether it's general safety or, you know, disaster recovery or any of these things. And so now is the time to have this conversation with you and the people you live with and the people you love and determine what's your plan. Everybody needs a plan. And, you know, one of my favorite Soleri tunes is we did a little cartoon of that great line from Mike Tyson. Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. So I want the people listening to this not to just have a plan, but a plan for what they're going to do if they get punched in the face. Because I don't want it to take you down. I want it to just knock you down. You get back up and keep on going.
You or your kids, your family, your neighbor's kids, or whatever. It's not just you now. It's other people you care about.
Right. Right. So, Harry, thank you so much for joining me on the Salieri Report. Any last words of advice?
No, I hope hope your subscribers find this useful. That's always my hope.
I'm sure they will. And after they sort out what they need to do with gun ownership, they need to make sure they listen to the food series and get healthy and stay healthy. Unfortunately, the people who are trying to take away the guns are also feeding us GMOs. I just realized there was one last thing I wanted to mention. One of the institutions that has the lowest approval rating in the country is Congress. But I want to put in a compliment for Congress, because in 2013, as I said, Biden and Obama had clearly made a deal whereby they had promised gun control. And the push to get it was overwhelming. And it was the Republicans in Congress who stopped it. And it was an amazing fight. It was trench warfare down to the last vote, you know, and they were able to stop it. And it was closer than I would have wanted to see it. But you could tell people who would normally cave into Mr. Global were willing to go to the mat for it because they understood how important it was. And it was a miracle that they stopped it, but they did. And I think one of the reasons I would say, you know, it's very hard for many people to understand why someone like myself would vote for and support Trump. And this was one of the absolute core issues that the campaign was fought on sub rosa behind the scenes.
And so, and by the way, the Vegas thing basically forced these lawmakers that had two very good legislative acts that were going to be introduced and had a likelihood of passing, you know, the reciprocity of concealed carry in all states so that you wouldn't have the problems that I was talking about with New York and California. If you had a gun permit in one place, it was going to need to be on it everywhere. And the second was what they call the Hearing Protection Act, you know, which was basically the ability to use silencers with rifles, which, by the way, in other countries, it's sometimes required. I think there's a few countries where it's actually required to basically protect your hearing and be a more polite shooter and so on. But I think it's clear to, you know, the three basic precepts of the Salieri precepts, you know, bank local, eat fresh, shut off your TV. We need to enforce the Constitution and make sure, in particular, you get in the way of anybody taking away that Second Amendment right.
Right. Right. Amen. Okay, Harry, have a great day, and thank you again.
You bet.